Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Megan Green. She is Managing Director and Chief Economist of Manulife Asset Management. She's responsible for forecasting global macroeconomic and financial trends and analyzing the potential opportunities and impacts to support the firm's investment teams around the world. Formerly, she was with Robini Global Economics, where she had a focus on the Eurozone, and she also holds a master's in European politics from Oxford University. So quite a focus on Europe, and so we'd like to explore Megan's thoughts on Europe. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
So yeah, just wondering your thoughts. What's happening in Europe? The political situation there, the rise of anti-Euro parties, how that all affects what's happening as far as the economics and the financial situation of the Eurozone and the European Central Bank.
Sure. So I would say, first of all, that the far greatest risk coming out of Europe for this year, probably the next year, is political risk. Europe has an incredibly busy election schedule over the next year. The next election coming up is actually in France. It's coming up quite soon. Their two-round presidential election. It seemed at first very likely that it would be a runoff in the second round between the right-wing populist National Front's candidate, Marine Le Pen, and the center-left independent candidate, Emmanuel Macron. But more recently, actually, two other candidates have had a lot of momentum, and they're the center-right candidate, Fillon, and the communist candidate, Mélenchon. Now, this matters in large part because Le Pen and Mélenchon both are running on a platform that's very anti-European, very populist, and both have said in some form that they would like to renegotiate France's relationship with the Eurozone and potentially hold a referendum to see if France might want to leave the Eurozone. There is a chance that the second round of that election could be a Le Pen-Mélenchon runoff, and so that would be a market event for sure. It would be dramatic. More likely is still a Le Pen-Macron runoff, and then it does seem most likely that Macron will end up winning. Even if Le Pen, the most anti-European candidate, won, though, there's a parliamentary election at the end of this year, and it seems very unlikely that her party would do well in those elections. So it does seem like the parliament would still be controlled by centrists, in which case it might be very difficult for Le Pen to actually have a referendum on France's membership of the Euro. And even if they had a referendum, actually, the most recent opinion polls suggest that far and away most French would vote to keep France in the Euro. So I don't think that it's very likely, first of all, that Le Pen would win, but secondly, even if she did, that France would go ahead and exit the Eurozone. So it's a very low probability event, but such a high impact event. It's something worth looking at. The much bigger risk if Le Pen won actually isn't France leaving the Eurozone. It's just a series of bank runs, starting in France, but maybe spreading a bit wider. And that would obviously have implications on the markets. Even bigger as a risk for the Eurozone than the French elections, I think, are the Italian elections, which are due to be held by March of next year. It's possible they might be held early, but probably not before the fourth quarter of this year. And in any case, according to most opinion polls, the populist anti-European five-star movement is in the top slot. It's unlikely in an Italian election that the five-star movement would actually win an absolute majority, so they would have to find coalition partners, and that won't be easy just given their ideology and the ideologies of the other political parties in Italy that might want to form a coalition with them. So even if the Five Star Movement were to win the Italian elections, it's not totally clear that they would make it into government. But if they did make it into government, they've said they too would like to have a referendum on Italy's membership of the euro. And unlike in France, actually, Europe is much less popular in Italy. So it does seem plausible that if there were a referendum in Italy, then Italy could end up choosing to leave the euro. And that would be dramatic to have Europe's third largest country leaving the European project. That could really pose an existential challenge for the eurozone. So those are, you know, two countries that could end up going following in the footsteps of the UK in terms of leaving the European project. Scotland is another country that could end up actually leaving the EU in its attempt to leave the UK. Its hopes, obviously, given how pro-European Scotland is, would be to rejoin the EU, but they might end up having to get in the back of the line. So that's one concern. And then, of course, one issue that has been at the front of European risk since the beginning of the crisis, the global financial crisis, is Greece. Greece hasn't been solved by any stretch of the imagination. It's just garnering a lot less attention from the markets these days. I think whereas before, the real concern was that there would be a standoff between Greece and its creditors, and Greece would end up leaving the eurozone almost by accident. Now the schism is very different. It's very clear that the Greek government will just end up caving every time its creditors ask it new reforms of this government. And just recently, they just came up with a deal for another tranche of funding, and sure enough, the government caved and signed up to what the creditors demanded. The problem now is that the creditors themselves can't agree on what they want. So the IMF would really like to see Greece have debt relief, which is necessary in my view. The other creditors, particularly Germany, don't want to commit to debt relief now, particularly not in advance of the German elections coming up. And so if they don't come up with a solution, the IMF could end up leaving the bailout program, in which case there's a real risk that Germany and more recently the Netherlands has said that, you know, they wouldn't participate without the participation of the IMF. So if these countries, you know, don't participate, then the bailout program would fall apart. Greece would have no means for funding and could end up leaving the eurozone, not because it was a specific strategy on the part of the government or even on the part of the creditors, but again, almost by accident. So there is a risk that you could have some EU and eurozone breakup, even though it's the risk isn't as high as it once was. In terms of the actual economy, in the eurozone in aggregate, I think the eurozone is roughly a 1.5% growth economy. Again, that's in aggregate, so it masks big divisions between the core countries like Germany and the weaker countries like Greece and Portugal still, Italy as well. But data has been looking better, much as in the U.S., actually. A lot of the confidence data has looked good. A lot of the soft data, so the PMI data, for example, has been really improving. It's the hard data that's not looking as great. So things like industrial production, new factory orders, that hasn't really come in yet. But lending is actually expanding, so we might expect some improvement of the hard data such that there is, you know, a sustainable recovery, economic recovery in the eurozone. That recovery can only really be so strong as long as the approach remains that it's all the weaker countries doing all the adjusting, though, and all the core countries just carrying along as they always had. And evidence in that is Germany's current account surplus, which just continues to hit new record highs every month. So Germany and other core countries aren't adjusting at all. The weaker countries continue to cut their wages and pensions, in Greece's case at least, or at least haven't seen much wage or pension growth, and they continue to try to increase their national savings as a percentage of GDP to match Germany's again. And that just means there's not a lot of consumption or investment happening in the weaker parts of the eurozone. So that really cuts off any avenue towards domestic demand. It means that most of the eurozone is relying on exports for growth. So there is a recovery, an economic recovery happening in the eurozone. It's just muted by the fact that it's all the weaker countries doing all the adjusting and none of the stronger ones. And I think we can expect that to continue in the absence of any major policy change. So I think the eurozone in aggregate will continue to be sort of a 2% growth economy. Mm-hmm. In terms of what the ECB is doing, the ECB would love to normalize monetary policy. It's just taking them a while because the recovery is so weak and because inflation isn't coming in. So I think that the ECB will probably announce a tapering of their QE program at the end of this year. And then at the end of the next year, they might have a rate hike. They might have to wait until the beginning of the following year. But the ECB is very much going in the footsteps of the U.S. Fed in trying to very, very gradually normalize monetary policy. And I think if some of these political risks I mentioned materialize, it'll be incredibly difficult for the ECB to hike rates into that, for sure. And there are other risks in the banking sector, for example, particularly in Italy, that might make it really difficult for the ECB to tighten monetary policy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier on bank runs. So could those be initiated from a catalyst of something other than one of the countries pulling out, like Italy or France, you know, pulling out of the European Monetary Union? Like, would it be other factors potentially, or in terms of the bank runs?
Yeah, you could see bank runs happening as a result of financial instability in and of itself. So particularly in Italy, there are a lot of banks that are still requiring recapitalization. Non-performing loans in Italian banks, Portuguese, Irish, Greek, even French banks are really elevated. And it used to be that they would work out their non-performing loans by creating bad banks. Because of EU state rules, they can't create the same kinds of bad banks that they used to be able to. And so that's no longer a solution, which means that none of these countries really know what to do with the massive heap of NPLs that are sitting on their balance sheets. And so if you see those non-performing loans start to be realized and turn into defaults, you could end up having a real scare. The Eurozone has made some progress on institutional change in terms of creating a banking union, but they haven't gotten all the way there yet. So rather than saying they have a banking union, I'd say they have sort of a loose banking federation. And there's still no risk sharing in terms of banks in Europe. So that means that not only is there not a common deposit guarantee in Europe, but I do think that if any country has a big bank that really needs to be wound down, now governments aren't allowed to step in and bail them out. And I think that winding down a big bank is just absolutely politically toxic for any leader. So faced with that choice, I think most leaders would just break the rules and completely undermine the banking union. And that in and of itself could spark off bank runs as well.
Do you see the potential for a move towards a fiscal union in terms of, you know, creating an actual European bond, or you know, just sort of conducting fiscal policy across the entire Eurozone?
So I think part of a fiscal union is needed, though I don't think we need, for example, a common fiscal authority. I think we do need to see asset class in Europe that is liquid and deep enough to withstand any sudden stops. And so I do think that they need to create mutualized debts like a euro bond. But then actually I think that the private sector can go ahead and step in rather than having a fiscal authority. So if we had a capital markets union, I think that could go a long way towards achieving what a public fiscal union could achieve. And I think that's necessary because I just don't think that there's any political will, either in the core or in the periphery, to actually have a fiscal authority and have everybody sign up to the same rules. So mm-hmm. I think it's unlikely, and it would be a waste of political capital to try to create a fiscal authority. One way of explaining what I think that the Eurozone needs is a mutualized debt, so a Eurobond. But then in terms of the private markets, sort of governing cross-border investment and exposure, it's a bit like our credit card companies. So Visa and MasterCard, that's mutualized debt with no real central authority to manage it. So there is some precedent for it. I think it's possible, but I don't think it's possible to see a full fiscal union with a single fiscal authority. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Eurobonds just aren't at all on the agenda now. It would require several more acute crises and existential crises in the Eurozone to get the core members and the peripheral members to sign up for it, but particularly Germany, because Germany doesn't really see why they should accept other countries' risk, and they're worried about creating sort of a moral hazard by going ahead and mutualizing bonds. So I think it's very unlikely, but I do think we need euro bonds eventually for the European project to stay together.
Mm-hmm. And actually, just recently this week, U.S. President Donald Trump was making some comments on the dollar, that it was too strong, and so there was some movement on the dollar going lower, pushing the euro higher. Could that be a trend? And if that were to happen, if the euro would strengthen, could that cause global havoc as the countries struggle to on their economy and debt burdens?
Well, I think it's really unlikely that the general trend will be that the dollar weakens. I think it's much more likely that the dollar ends up a bit stronger, even though the president, the U.S. president, is trying to talk down the dollar at the moment. It's really hard to conceive of a situation in which it's in the U.S. government's best interest to see the dollar depreciate. The only scenario I can really think of is if there were huge problems in other economies and the U.S. Fed opened up swap lines with other central banks to essentially fund their QE program. So with the Bank of Japan and the ECB and the Bank of England. So I think that's really unlikely. So we have seen the dollar weaken a little bit, but the general trend, I think, is for the dollar to strengthen. And that's relative to a basket of currencies, but that includes the euro. So I think generally the euro will be weaker. We will have movements. It depends on your time frame, of course. But I think if the French election results have Macron at the helm of government, then I think that there will be a rally. And the euro could strengthen off the back of that. But if Le Pen were to win, for example, I think the euro would weaken off the back of that. So it will depend to some degree on political developments. But over the medium to long term, I do think that the euro will probably weaken relative to the dollar. Not so much necessarily because of factors that mean that the euro should be weak, but in large part because what the U.S. and the Fed are doing.
Given these political developments, do you see Germany continuing to bear the debt of the rest of Europe in terms of transferring its current account surplus to the less fortunate states of the Union? Or could it be that Germany considers on leaving the Eurozone?
So I think Germany has really been taking on risk through the target two balances at the ECB. So the target two imbalances now are actually at record highs. They're higher than they were back in 2012 when there were much greater concerns about countries leaving the Eurozone. And that's largely because of Italy, actually. So it's largely because of German investors pulling out of Italy. Now, I think that only becomes a problem if a country actually defaults and leaves the Eurozone. And that seems unlikely, I think. It's certainly not my base case scenario over the next couple of years. Otherwise, Germany isn't really funding everybody else's debt. But I do think that there is a discussion about whether it's really in Germany's best interest to stay in this project. And I think it definitely is. Germany benefits from an artificially weak currency because it is connected to so many weaker countries. And that's been really helpful for Germany, given that their growth model has been pretty reliant on exports for the past several years. So the domestic demand now stands for a slightly smaller percentage of GDP than it has in the past, but it's only really slightly. sorry, domestic demand is a slightly larger percentage of GDP, but only slightly larger. And so Germany still is dependent on exports for growth. And if Germany were to go ahead and leave the Eurozone, it would probably see its currency appreciate massively, and that would completely undermine its entire growth model. So it would have to come up with an entire new model, and that's not really in Germany's best interest. So I do think that it's in Germany's best interest to stick in the Eurozone. I will say that I've spent a lot of time talking to the CDU government, and my argument with them has always been that Germany has always had a really high national savings rate, and so they've had a really low national investment rate, which hasn't really served them well. It means they've invested in Greek government bonds and Portuguese retail and Irish property, which those investments turned out to be really bad investments. But it also means that German investment domestically has been really low. So Germany suffers from chronic underinvestment. And as a result, their roads are in bad shape. Their bridges are in bad shape. So my argument has always been that maybe the German government should encourage domestic investment, and that would boost Germany's growth, and it would also trickle out and help the growth of the rest of the Eurozone. The German government's response to me every time is to ask me, why they should care about growth, which as an economist, you can imagine, is seems like a weird question. But according to them, they don't have incredibly high growth, but they have a really high standard of living and very low unemployment. So in their view, growth is kind of an Anglo-Saxon obsession, and they're doing just fine in their view. So this approach to growth in Germany and this approach to the entire region, whereby Germany does everything the same as it's always done and everybody else tries to look more like Germany, I think that's here to stay for a number of years.
Interesting. And what are your thoughts on the UK and Brexit, how that's playing out? Could there be any changes between now and the next 2 years after they received their Article 50 notice like a few weeks ago?
Yeah, so I think there are some who are still hoping that the UK will take back triggering Article 50. And I spoke with the guy who wrote Article 50, John Kerr, and he says he intentionally left wiggle room in it. I think it's very unlikely that the government will do that, given that they're acting on a mandate that was given to them by the people. Also, if they were to go ahead and revoke it, they probably would have already damaged their relations with the rest of the EU, given that they're negotiating to leave. So I think, I did a lot of consulting on Brexit and testified in the House of Lords. And before Brexit, I would have said that the worst possible option was the UK going for a so-called hard Brexit, which means leaving the single market altogether. Now I think that's no longer the worst option. I actually think it's the most likely option. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has said that's what they'll pursue. But I think there's a worse option out there, which is that after 2 years of negotiating, both their divorce from the EU and their new relationship with the EU, they actually don't have any agreement on what their new relationship with the EU should be, at which point the UK would just kind of stumble out of the EU. And they would have to rely on the WTO for their trade relationships. The problem with that is that right now the WTO has relatively robust rules and some credibility, but in 2 years from now it actually might not. So you could conceive of, for example, the U.S. government trying to implement a border adjustment tax, which is most likely illegal according to WTO rules, and having the WTO turn around and say, well, that's illegal, you can't do that. And the U.S. administration could reply by just saying, well, we don't care, and doing it anyhow. And that would completely declaw the WTO. So that's just one example. But there are a number of potential trade policies coming out of the U.S. in particular that could really undermine the WTO. And so if the U.K.'s plan is to actually rely on WTO rules at the end of 2 years, the WTO might be severely undermined by then. In which case, that's a terrible plan for the UK. So I think that's the worst scenario. The only way I think that the UK could actually have a deal at the end of 2 years is if they cut and paste it from somewhere else. Just because it's, you know, 2 years is not a lot of time to negotiate their divorce with the EU first. And of course, not much will get done before the French elections and then the German elections in September and then the Italian elections in March. So there will have to be sort of breaks in negotiations. And so, you know, they'll have to negotiate the divorce and then they'll have to negotiate an entire new relationship. That's a lot to do in 2 years. So if they can cut and paste a new relationship from somewhere else, they might be able to pull it off. One way they could do that is to copy the deal that Canada and the EU struck, the CETA deal. The problem with that is it doesn't include anything on services, and more than half of the UK's economy is services. So they'd have to write an entire new chapter to cover services, and that in and of itself could take 2 years. So that's problematic. There's one other option that's currently being discussed kind of behind closed doors in the UK, and that's to copy the deal that the EU just struck with the Ukraine, which does include services. So that is really feasible. It's mainly being talked about behind closed doors because the UK doesn't want anyone to realize that they're trying to follow the Ukraine as a model. But that is one option. It's too early to say whether that really is possible or not, but it's something that they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And finally, just wondering your thoughts on the investment environment, what this all means, not mentioning any specific companies or securities, any thoughts on asset classes or types of investments that could make sense in Europe, given all of the scenarios? So assuming, there could be some investments that that could make sense regardless of all of the different scenarios, like whether Germany stays, whether they pull out, and different countries leaving, the effect of political parties getting elected, and would it make sense for Europe in general now being depressed from a contrarian perspective, just perhaps like German corporations or German real estate, if they were to pull out, the currency would appreciate, or but if they stay in, there could be more inflation generated to ease the burden of debt across the Eurozone. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so German real estate certainly is one potential opportunity. But generally, I would say, even with all the risks that I've highlighted, particularly the political risks, I think that the most likely scenario over the next year or two is that we go through all these elections and actually in the end we just have the status quo, which is, I think, would be market positive. know, I'm hesitant to get too excited about that because I do think that there are real restraints on the economic recovery in Europe because of the politics as they currently stand. So the status quo means that would continue. But still, I think that that would be a sort of risk on development, in which case, given that you have the ECB continuing to ease now, and I think that they'll continue to maintain really accommodative monetary policy going forward, and you have the Fed and the U.S. tightening, actually, that does mean that there might be opportunities in equities in Europe generally. So I do think that that is one place that investors could look. Also, in terms of banks in Europe, there are some real problems in terms of the health of bank balance sheets, particularly in Italy, Portugal, even France. But banks are incredibly cheap. So I do think that there might be some valuable investments there. And generally, I think valuations for companies in Europe will go up. So I would say that European equities are probably a good opportunity now.
Great, great insight. And how can our listeners learn more about your work?
So you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Economist Meg to not only see what I write myself and tweet it out, but also to just see my commentary on the latest, greatest in Europe and the rest of the world.
Great. Thank you very much for being on the program show, Megan. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.